back in that room having the same conversation over and over again. I think that's my hell loop. That's I think it's, there's an alternate reality here in How to Live Safely in a Science Fictional Universe where somebody pays not to have to revisit certain things to avoid ever thinking about a particular loop. I don't know. I guess that's like Total Recall. It's like you just remove this memory from this frustrating memory.
In the multi-universe idea of how to live safely in a science fictional universe, you probably could have that hell universe. You could have a whole universe full of hell and just make weekend visits.
Weekend visits to hell?
If you want. Just to see what it's like. Yeah. Are you curious? You could do the same thing for heaven.
I think we just try to get stuck in that heavenly loop. That's what you pay the big bucks for. If you can afford it, which is an interesting idea, right? Can you afford the loop that you want to get stuck in?
We're going to talk about How to Live Safely in a Science Fictional Universe by Charles Yu. We've had this on our list for a long time. I remember starting to read this a while ago. And I have to say, this has been a difficult read for a couple of reasons. And I have a feeling that when we start talking about it, if we stay focused on the book and don't fall down other kind of side rabbit holes, it also will be difficult to talk about. Time travel is hard to talk about. And this idea of science fictional universe with narrational gravity and time travel as a mental ability is a little tricky to talk about. Though, this is not the only science fiction time travel book that I've read that has this idea of a mental time travel.
This is a story about this main character who goes by the name of the novelist, Charles Yu, and he is a certified network technician for T-class personal use chronogrammatical vehicles. We find out he's decided to live in this time machine, but his job is to go around and help people, usually because they're doing something they shouldn't be doing and they get stuck. His job is to fix that. He's traveling with his, I don't know if I even totally understood this, but a dog that's real but not real named Ed, and his artificial intelligence guide, the voice of the ship, Tammy. Mm-hmm. He could choose between Tim or Tammy, and he chose Tammy with her quote-unquote depressive tendencies, which is, that was interesting. And so he's traveling around, and he's doing this really in search of his father, who disappeared years ago. His father was one of the first, if not, according to him, the first to invent a time machine. And he's looking for his father, and he ends up spending most of his time in Minor Universe 31, owned and operated by Time Warner Time. And
love that.
What else do we need to say there? It starts off that he ends up shooting himself, and so we know that's coming. This is a Chekhov's gun situation. The gun's been mentioned. We know eventually he's going to shoot himself, and we're working through toward that echo, wondering if he finds his father. Okay, so we want to start with some sort of discussion about, you jumped right in there with your struggle with this version of time travel. We've asked ourselves, what is sci-fi? And no question that this is science fiction. We've got a lot of pseudoscience. We've got a time machine. It's an actual machine. Even though it veers from that later, we can get to that, but he is in a machine.
Maybe around the size of a phone booth.
A little bigger than that, because it was machine. Just big enough that he could lie down. It was just enough that he could lie down and sleep in it. But not much bigger than a phone booth, photo booth, I don't know, small apartment, kitchen, something like that. Okay. And so he's traveling around. Yeah, go for it. You struggled with that. Not that part, but you struggled with other aspects of the way time travel works.
Oh, okay. How can we tell the present from the past? Time travel is a mental ability that can be cultivated. We perceive the present, but we remember the past. Can't be reversed, except for something like deja vu. And This is one of those head-spinning time travel kinds of things that I want to believe in, and I've had deja vus, and it makes sense. That hooks me in, but it's really hard to get with some of the wonderfully rich language that's in this story. One of the phrases I liked was narrational gravity. And that mixes stuff up and it makes me think. And sometimes in this story, it was making me think so hard, my head's spinning, and I'm thinking, ah, what is this? Those are the kinds of things that were tough for me when I was reading this book. You have to, I guess, after about a third, maybe, not quite halfway through, then I was getting into the rhythm of the story. But for me, it was a rough kind of start because I thought this was going to be like a space opera or something, but it wasn't a space opera. It was more of a family story. So I was struggling to get the rhythm and idea of it.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. I think my head was spinning as well as I tried to, you know, wrap my mind around this sort of concept of science fiction where, and he says himself, I listened to one reading and he didn't really answer a lot of questions, but he presented to Google. So it's one of those Google presentations on YouTube. I listened to that. He didn't know how much sense it made what he was positing here, but I like the idea of sort of thinking about thinking about time travel as a sort of, this is where it's confusing. I think there's a part here where he's physically going from place to place. And so he's in this time machine and he's going back and having and observing himself in these memories. And yet at times it's not clear. This is where I think there's a little bit of a loop, a gap in the storytelling where where is he in this moment? So he's riding along, he's there visiting. He revisits a conversation he's having with his dad and they're in a car. And in that moment, and this is where I struggle a little bit with my suspension of disbelief here where, okay, where is Charles Yu, the time traveler, older Charles Yu, in this moment when he's observing himself in the car with his dad driving along? Because at other times, when the time machine appears, and there's going to be spoilers here in Lifetime Sci-Fi, where let's say his future self appears and he ends up shooting himself. I imagine that almost like a Doctor Who episode where it's, here's the booth, it's arriving, and he's there. And it says early on, if you do see yourself coming out of a time machine, you should run. So it's like in some moments, it seems like the time machine's actually there, like in a time machine or the time ships, right? Where actually this machine's arriving. And other times, it gets into his overarching theory where it's these are just stories and it's like you're traveling through storylines,
which makes sense
based on memory and regret and nostalgia, which I found really fascinating because he is thinking about memory as a form of, right, kind of revisiting a memory, a way of time traveling. All of our memories are just stories, and so he's suggesting that maybe there's a way to time travel through the stories themselves.
I agree with that. To me, my interpretation of this was that he doesn't, except for the beginning of the story where he goes out and he helps people who are stuck in time and fix their machines. And I love this part where he says that the thing about software, not knowing they're real, is not, No, that's not it, is chronodiegetic, manifold. Loved it when he was talking about what is the wear pattern on your machine of your chronodiegetic manifold. So he could look at somebody's manifold and say, oh, okay, here's where you went wrong. So at the beginning of the story, he was helping people from his machine to other machines like that. Then as you were talking about the memories as part of time travel, it switched into this whole family kind of thing. And that's when I got this vibe of the narrator of A Christmas Story, this little kid was explaining how his dad did this and dad did that. Like he came home with this lamp that was a leg and the mom went, what is this? Mm-hmm. But he loved it. Doing the turkey, those kinds of things. I got that kind of family story vibe. Traveling through the memories that he had, maybe even some memories that he made up, like his mom being in that kind of temple area. But what I got by the end of the story is that maybe he never left the time machine. Maybe it's all just him and in his head. And he realized, and he said it in the story too, if somebody was watching me get out of the time machine at the end of the story and how he got shot, they wouldn't see the other person. They'd just see him pointing the gun at himself and shooting himself. There wouldn't be anybody else there. And so I thought, oh, okay. Maybe he never left the time machine. Maybe the time machine is a metaphor for what's going on in his own head.
I had some similar interpretations of it, right? It's almost like the whole thing operates as a sort of allegory for trying to deal with a midlife crisis, right? It's feeling
or a crazy
stuck,
person,
right? Feeling like you're stuck in these, there's all these loops, lots of symbolism with the loops and that you're stuck. And then so the sort of shooting himself is a way of trying to break free from this loop that he's stuck in. There's a sort of rebirth.
And maybe that's why people shoot themselves. I don't know. Maybe they feel in that depressive state. He gives us plenty of clues that he's not really a happy guy. He does point out the moment of happiness that he and his father had when they presented the time machine to the manager. And even at that wonderful time, he was still getting the feeling like, oh, we're on the downside of that now. So there was plenty of clues that he could have been a depressed guy and this whole story is in his head.
Yeah, yeah.
In this universe.
Like Slaughterhouse-Five or something, right? Where, in the end, was he really time traveling at all? Yeah, you can wonder that. I still enjoyed conceptually like this idea of, I like the narrative elements that were brought in. Like you're saying, I think I liked it better when I felt like he's actually time traveling and that they found a way to travel through all these different stories. And I think that I wanted them all to be real because I love this idea of bringing in like all these grammatical terms, these terms from language, their world lines, diegetics. So this, right, he mentions that. So it's just as a term, this is from the American Heritage Dictionary. So diegetics, the presentation of a narrative without direct dramatic imitation of events, scenes, or characters described. So I always think of non-diegetic, I think of filmmaking and the music that's brought in to give the viewers the music that's outside of the reality of the film itself, right? So these non-diegetic sounds, so this is the orchestra that's brought in at the end of, here's John Williams, it's the end of E.T., they're flying through the sky, and here comes this orchestra, and I'm meant to feel a certain way. I like the idea that he's playing with kind of the machinery of a science fictional world or the architecture of it that's non-diegetic in that sense. It's this external architecture that surrounds, if the reality is our own one world, there's all of this sort of science fictional stuff surrounding it that people can travel through and explore. And I thought that was a cool idea. Right?
Nice.
It's also a way of dealing with himself. This doesn't make sense. And this is where it's, with all these time travel stories, it gets so challenging. He says there's no way to change the past. It's a little bit of a loophole and a way of trying not to deal with. For me, it's a sound of thunder makes a lot of, it's a lot easier for me to wrap my head around, right? You go back, you step off the path, you step on a butterfly, there's a ripple effect, it changes everything thereafter. I get that. It makes sense to me. Of course, there's consequences for little changes. And he said he goes back, and this was a wonderful moment that I'm sure you love too. Like, I wanted more of this, where he, early on in the book, he goes back and he meets the son of Luke Skywalker, who's trying to go back, and he's upset. He can't grow up in the shadow of his heroic father, and he wants to kill him. And that's an old trope. And I love that idea of him going back and he's helping, what was his name? Linus? Linus. Yeah, it's the Luke's son, like Linus. Yeah. It's hilarious. So he's still L. Skywalker, but he's Linus. And of course, I don't know if that's a Peanuts tribute, but this kind of pathetic. Linus is the one with the blanket. And he's like this kind of pathetic character. Charles Yu needs to fix the time machine because he's trying to do something you can't do, which is change the past, and it breaks the machine. And it's just a little too easy. I know, as a way to, I guess that's not the focus of his story. It would be a totally different version if that were the case, right? But he can't, you can observe the past, but you can't change it. And it's interesting, right? It's interesting.
But excuse me, he does end up changing the past at the end of the story. He figures out that...
Does he?
That moment in time that is between free will and determination, and he can somehow connect with his past self to his present self in a way that changes the outcome of that, or bounces him out of that loop, essentially. I don't know. That's what I got from that part of the story.
Yeah, you're going all the way ahead to Appendix A.
The end of the story, yeah.
We should say, too, we haven't really said this. I thought this was clever. I liked it. I always think of Charles Bukowski's The Post Office. I don't know if you've ever read that. It's one of my favorite up there for me, like really, really, really meaningful text in my reading life. You get to the end of this book. There's a spoiler, so I don't know, fast forward 20 seconds if you don't want to hear the spoiler for Post Office. You read through the whole thing, and then you find out in the end he's writing the book you've been reading. And so it's a similar idea here as we near the climax of the story, and maybe it is, it's getting the rising action at some point. We find out that this is the book he's been writing, he's been constructing.
Yeah, it was lovely to be on the same page that he was talking about, on the same page. I had to look. You can't not look at the page number and say, oh,
yeah, I think that was pretty cool. It was cool to build up to that. And in the end, he's got this Appendix A. It's really instructional as sort of this resolution for this conflict with his father. It's telling the reader what to do, as if the reader is another time traveler like him. Or is he telling himself, this is what you're supposed to do? And so it's got this inside, there's a box, look in that box, find another one, then another one. It says, you can say hello. And it switches. It's got this second person instructional approach. And so I get what you're saying, where it's telling somebody to make choices, to be proactive, to be active, not passive, and to do these things. And you're suggesting he breaks free of this loop. But in another way, it's like he, I guess in my mind, and this is where it gets confusing with time travel, is this just like an extension of that same loop where he does all those things? In other words, wasn't he always going to do what this book said he was going to do? Okay.
Yes. But in the end, he gets out of the whole kind of, in my mind, depressive kind of loop that brought him to the moment of shooting himself. And then in that moment, he was saying, okay, if I shoot myself, I'm going to die. And he's in that space between free will and determinism, and saying, yeah, there is a little loophole here that I can maybe do something different. And he uses that to break free of his own time, because he wants to get out of the time loop. He wants to get out. And he realizes that, he shot himself. He had to do that. All of the things happened that said in the book, he didn't have to die.
Okay, yeah, I see what you're saying.
And then he got a new time machine. He got a new guy named Tim, not Tammy, and he went on with his life, moving forward. And that's, I think, the lesson that he wanted to tell himself, too, is he had to get out of the time machine and get out of the loop.
Right, yeah. So
start living.
Once he was shot, he escapes from the loop.
But it's also a kind of a mental thing, too. I got shot, I'm going to die. or I got shot, and I'm going to survive. I'm going to move on. I'm going
to... Yeah, he has to be willing to confront death in order to be reborn into something better.
And looking at his life, that he wanted to change, and he wanted to make a change. But he couldn't do any of that because it was all written that he had to do certain things. That was the loop. I think, and this was a part of the book that I found interesting too, part of the story I found interesting was that all of this happened in no time at all. It was like, it's always been that time. His AI, Tammy, was telling him that, yeah, time hasn't changed. It's been this time, and it's time for you to do this now. This is the moment. And I thought, oh, okay, maybe this, just a blip. It's all this happened in a blip, but it happened in a time machine, so all this stuff could happen. I don't,
Yeah, exactly, because right I think there. Where it's, the head spins is because while a version of himself is shot and escapes the loop, at the same time, there's always a version of himself climbing into the machine and stuck in the loop. So part of him stays in the loop and he moves on, but there's still always somebody stuck in the loop, a version of himself stuck in the loop.
Okay. And this is important too, because he didn't want to just jump to a new universe and say, okay, I'm not going to be shot. In this universe, I'm not going to be shot. I have time traveled away from that or skipped it or whatever, and I've escaped that. But at the same time, his AI, Tammy, says, if you do that, you lose all those memories. So all of those memories about his father and his mother and all of that happened would be gone. He wouldn't have that because he starts a new version of himself. And he didn't want to do that. He wanted his old version. So, yeah.
Yeah, like when you were talking earlier, reminding talking about how little time had really passed. I really enjoyed that moment where he shows up in the at the place where he rents the room. Right? He has a brief moment where he's outside
of
the time machine and he's gone for ages, right? Maybe even years. But he can return right back to where he rents the room. So he's just paying like a month's rent or something. He pays for a month. And he can use that room forever as long as he stays in this time machine and always goes back to that point. Yeah, he's paying for a month's rent, but he travels for years. I thought that was pretty fascinating. And how weird for the people around you, which had me thinking about, I mean, you're still an expat. Right, it had me thinking of expat life and how, and I'm now back in Seattle, but I living so many years abroad, when you go back home, you in a sense, it feels like you haven't left. And yet for me, all this time has passed. And when I come back, I might see some changes, but in a sense, it's, oh, this restaurant's still, it's always so, well, it's really, you feel a sense of discoherence when, I feel like there's a term for that, it came up somewhere in the novel, I can't remember, but it's so strange. I don't know. In my mind, I feel like things should be exactly the same, like in this time capsule, when I return home. And anytime something's gone, it's really I don't know. It was like a sense of grief or confusion, like reverse culture shock. And yet, there's other places that haven't changed, and it's like, oh yeah, I'm just traveling back in time, and this restaurant is this. Sort of the same as when I left a year ago.
I was thinking, as an expat, the things that you experience and all of that just changes you forever. One of the things that I had to learn when I moved to Thailand is that I had so many suggestions for how to improve the traffic in Thailand and how they weren't doing it like I wanted them to do it. And finally, I realized that I can't change Thailand, but I can let Thailand change how I think. And so when I get back to the States, the landscape that Charles Yu was talking about, I have changed a lot. And there are some things that when I go back have stayed the same. And I'm looking for things mostly like you say, restaurants, the,
right.
Those kinds of places.
Yeah, yeah. I think all that has to do with what he's getting at here, where it's an exploration of sort of memory, maybe a bit of regret, I think, at times, and also nostalgia, right? He's got a page, there's these different pages peppered throughout that give, I can't remember the term for that, but they're just a quote or like a description of something in the, they're marked by, there's a bar at the top, and it's like from How to Live Safely in a Science Fictional Universe, right? These kind of sort of tips or definitions. And
one, like the manual.
And one has, one section is titled, as a subheading, like Nostalgia, Underlying Cosmological Explanation for. So it's the underlying cosmological explanation for nostalgia. Weak but detectable interaction between two neighboring universes that are otherwise not causally connected. Nostalgia, there's a great line, a moment in Mad Men, John Hamm's character is giving this pitch in this moment where he's pitching the Kodak carousel, right, to some executives, and he slows down, it's all, the lights are off, and he's flipping through, he uses his old family photos, and it's click, and then it's click, he's going through the carousel, and he talks about what is nostalgia. Nostalgia is the pain from an old wound. And I think it's like the Greek definition of nostalgia, and it's beautiful and painful at the same time, because you can, it's, you've got this beautiful moment, and at the same time, there's a bit of pain because you can't get back to that moment. And it's this lovely moment where, and I got, at some point, I want to hear what your moment would be, but what are these moments, these memories? You could tell a story and you can go back, but you can't literally go back and relive it. And so it's painful, even though it's beautiful and painful at the same time. And so I think that's like this moment of interaction between these neighboring universes where there's this storified version where you're telling yourself where it's not exactly that memory because you can't go back there. So here the story is a neighboring, in Charles Yu's version, it's a neighboring world that you can go back to the story version when you time travel, but you can't literally be there, right? Anyway, he goes on this page and said, it manifests itself in humans as a feeling of missing a place one has never been. A place very much like one's home universe, or as a longing for versions of oneself that one will never and can never know. And that's it. I think it's so cool that Charles Yu, I love what he's exploring here and this idea of memory, regret, nostalgia. I think that's really, it's something I struggle with myself because I want to go back exactly in these memories that I have. And then I just, I can't get there and I can't, there's too much loss of memory there. And that's a human struggle. And yet some people remember things in great deal much more. And I think I want to be that person, but I'm not, right? And I find that a bit painful.
What Charles Yu does so wonderfully, he does take those definitions, those experiences, memories, places them really close, and then he throws them into his science fictional blunder and just puts it on high and just mixes everything up. And I really like it when he does that. He visits his mother, who is in time loop purposefully. And but not an upload. She didn't have enough money for the best version. So, you know, it was a medium version. And he has a little chat with her, and then she goes back to her little time loop. I think that's what you're asking me to tell you.
Where
would be my time loop that I would put myself in?
If you had to, let's say you could afford the best time loop machine, what loop would you be in?
What place would I put my head in to that? I think... I saw in our notes that you had asked that question, and I've been thinking about it. And I thought, oh, okay, I'd walk down to the lake, and then I'd walk down to the lake and watch the sunset again, and then I'd walk down to the lake and see the sunset. Then I'd walk down to, but I wouldn't know that I would just be clunked back and walking again. I wouldn't know that. I'd just be walking to the, watching the sunset. I don't know if I'd ever want to put myself into something like that. And what would happen if something went wrong with the loop? Maybe I'd only get the first 10 steps and then I'd have to go back again. It'd be like the myth of Sisyphus. I'd just be rolling the rock up the mountain, not knowing what for.
Yeah, what's the, this has me thinking about, what's that Black Mirror episode where there's an aging couple, I think one's dying or has died. It's Juniper, is it Juniper Sands or something? And there's this option that they can upload their consciousnesses into some sort of heaven where they can be together forever. But it's a sort of loop, right? That upload show you were talking about before. Juniper, it's Juniper something, I think is the name of the world they can upload themselves into.
I thought I saw all the Black Mirror episodes.
No, that one's in my top.
Remember?
Yeah, top.
Or maybe it was too spooky for me to watch.
Probably my top five.
Really?
Sure.
Oh, then you have to watch Upload. Because it's the same kind of...
Yeah, it sounds really cool.
Put your digitalized soul into a digital, digitalized universe.
I guess I would choose that over
nothing. Controls the universe.
I mean, I certainly wouldn't in my... Yeah.
How do you know? It's nothingness.
I choose it, but I guess I definitely wouldn't choose that. I suppose if you were old and... decrepit, or I don't know, let's say you had dementia or something. If you had dementia, like why, and you had to be alive. And so rather than being completely lost in some, I guess, would I care if I wasn't truly conscious of reality anyway, would I mind being in some, I would rather be in some sort of beautiful memory loop for the rest of the time that I'm alive, rather than just be in a state of dementia and not know.
How do we know dementia isn't
time
traveling
sort of loop
itself?
Oh, yeah, right.
It's a natural, it's a natural way of time travel. And in your notes, you talk about a Buddhist kind of loop as well, and the cycle of living again, reincarnation. Isn't that the same kind of thing that we're talking about here?
Yeah. I think he gets into that. I guess for me, the overall, to come back to what the sort of the reading of it and whether you enjoyed it. I love the structure of it. I thought that was clever. I think the exploration of those themes of memory, regret, nostalgia, I thought was wonderful. That was a very interesting way to explore, say, a father-son relationship or lack thereof. But a father that maybe is always working all the time in a way. And I think there's a bit of a stereotype there with, I think a Taiwanese American, Asian American. He doesn't dig deep into that, but I think he mentions at one point about being an immigrant and his father's being looked at as in a way that's when they're presenting the time machine to that older white businessman.
Oh,
that it kind of deals with class issues.
And let me interrupt you there. Yeah. When he was talking about his own realization when he went to the school, and how he realized that he thought he was part of that school, but then he realized that he was still an outsider from the language that his classmates used. And that I thought that was
just a great way to explore all those ideas.
In the end, it very domestic exploring.
Yeah,
family.
There's a little less. I think cycles. I'm guessing. You tell me if I'm wrong here, but I think the parts I had an expectation of a lot more Luke Skywalker and all kinds.
Space opera.
I wasn't thinking space opera
ready.
So much as I was thinking more
science fictional universe, space opera.
Well,
we're going.
Forgetting what's the book where the main character starts off in this junkyard. He's all digitized. He's online. He's got to follow all these clues that this rich person has left in order to win the inheritance. They made a movie out of it. Player One. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, Ready
I was player. Hoping for all the... Ready Player One is so much 80s nostalgia. I just wanted this thing to be loaded with sci-fi references. Yeah. And we get our little Holy Heinlein phrase or Mother of Ursula K. Le Guin.
And Ursula Le Guin.
I just wanted a lot more of that. I think that would have been a lot of fun. And I think, so I had that expectation going into it. I wanted all these references to my favorite sci-fi pop culture. I was hoping for that. And then I was also, I think the other part that I didn't love was, even though as a middle-aged man who, I think like anyone, everybody has some father, son, to me, or parent-child dynamics that I think I struggle with. It was relatable for me. It was relatable as somebody who's playing with what I'm doing with my own life in some ways. Like I found that all really relatable. It has this a bit of a melancholic tone to it that I didn't find that fun, even though I found it interesting. It was missing a lot of fun. It could have been more fun.
Okay,
exactly. It's a little more playful and so fun.
Not every science fiction book we've read has been fun.
There's an opportunity here. There was an opportunity here for a lot of whimsy and playfulness. And there's little moments of it. Yeah. So it could have gone that direction. I don't know if that was an intentional choice.
When he was talking about how different science fictional universes were built, and some weren't built totally, maybe 70%, I found that fascinating. And I'd like to know more about that kind of a thing, or who's hanging out in the other 30%.
Yeah, you know? I wanted more of the Luke Skywalker moment. I felt like I had hopes even early on when he mentioned that. I was like, oh, cool. Who else are we going to see here? Is it, I don't know, are we suddenly going to run into Chewbacca at some point? Or there's a mention of everybody wanting to choose Han Solo. And it's like, all right, let's have a little moment with Han Solo, like in some alternate universe. Because he does that in a moment, and we just don't get enough of who he runs into as a repairman.
He gives us things, and then he takes them away. In my notes I have here, anything can be a time machine. And that's one of the times he was talking about time being the whole concept of time travel. Maybe starts, maybe it's a springboard for your mind, and then you get into the time machine and take off from there. That's the momentum that it does. But then when he says stuff like, oh, anything can be a time machine, I'm thinking, oh, that's cool, but how does that help me with the story? And then there are other moments where that epiphany happens with the dad. And the dad said, oh my God, why didn't I think of this before? Time travel takes time. And I thought, when I was reading that, I thought, wow, that is a thing that I hadn't heard before. And I want to think about that and investigate that more. I didn't get very much more of that from the story, but that could be a whole other story in itself.
He's got a father who spends his whole life building a time machine so that he can have more time with his family that he didn't spend time with because he was building the time machine. And it's the lesson is like, be present, right? Be in the present moment. If there's like a moral to the story, it's like, be present. Yeah.
There you go. You've got it. And in that present time, you can't go backward and you can't go forward. And how long is that present moment last? It's just the moment, isn't it?
It's tough to be present to because we're always in our own thoughts and they're always happening just outside of the present. Yeah, exactly.
Where is that? What time is that? What time do those thoughts happen? Yeah, I agree. I like that.
Yeah, we should probably wrap up. I don't know, do we want to do, at least I've got to, time-wise, do we want to do devices real quick? Did you get a list of favorites?
Yeah, for me, there weren't, again, in this story, a lot of devices that
we try to do
grabbing me, but except for the AI, I loved Tammy. I thought she was amazing. And then the other AI guy,
Phil?
It's
funny idea.
Phil, who didn't know that he was an AI, and our hero spoiled that and bummed everybody out. And I thought, oh,
well,
that's
just
really
such a fun way to make fun of a certain type of middle management person who's doesn't realize they're a tool. And I apologize to those that I've worked with, in those middle managers who are friends and good people.
Have you known tools?
We're all tools in our own way.
Everybody.
Right? Yeah, no.
Oh, okay. You're good.
Yeah. Not to say that we're all cogs in a machine to some
degree. A lot of us know that we're tools.
We're all cogs in our own machine.
Yeah.
But it's funny. Yeah. I like the mini wormhole generator that he could modify it slightly to pry open really tiny temporal quantum windows into other universes through which I'm able to spy on my alternative selves. And I love this idea that he suggests that we're all, to some degree, versions of ourself in these alternate universes, just varying degrees of extreme versions of ourselves. But the essence of ourselves always has to be there. Probably not. It's really unlikely there's a version in which I'm Superman and in some other, or Batman, right? I'm probably not Batman. There are alternative universes, but I'm a varying degree of some version of myself here, which would be pretty cool to be Batman. So I'm a little disappointed, but how cool would it be to like just have a sneak peek into some other version of yourself and see what you're doing in some alternate universe? That would be cool.
I'm not sure. I like the idea. I like that part in the story. It was interesting. I'm not sure I'm buying that whole.
Yeah, because you believe in the butterfly.
It's hard for me to believe.
And that in this alternate universe, things could happen and there'd be a ripple effect where you might be a completely different version of yourself. Yeah, you believe in agency and you like the idea that there's an individual that can make choices and your life is not predetermined.
The like free will versus determinism. Oh, okay. So who wouldn't
Charles,
like
you,
free will?
Apparently. No, but he ends there. He ends with some free will. You're right. Okay, let me ask you this. So when you are, when you've gone back to your 21st birthday, or perhaps whatever day you first sat across from a parent and had an alcoholic beverage, a cocktail, a beer, whatever it might have been, what will you be chatting about? Sorry to send you back there. Is it a memory or just a story? I don't know.
No. It's a terrible memory. It brings up all sorts of horrible things. Not nostalgic at all. It would be a place that I would...
I don't remember the end of my 21st birthday. I know somebody... I woke up with a start in my bed the next morning with my shoes still on, and I think I know who got me home, but it was, there will be no, I guess it would be interesting to travel back, and I don't know if I want to see that, but I do remember a very nice, I remember sitting with my parents in a brewery. I remember where I was having a pitcher of beer with them, and that was a nice early evening. That was on my 21st. It was earlier in the evening, and that was a nice, lovely moment. But anyway, what would you be chatting about? What's your cocktail chatter?
Oh, okay. So we're into the cocktail chatter, yeah. I definitely wouldn't be with my dad or my parents about going on with that. I guess I would be getting out of my time machine in a much earlier time at a vacation spot where people would be going to relax and have fun, and that's what I would want to, that's the place I would want to be when I maybe sat on a beach without monster hotels behind me. The population, people would be there, but it wouldn't be like masses of people like it is now in certain places, and that's where I would be sipping my
cocktail. What are you chatting about?
In a place like that. Oh, I think I would be looking around and just trying to see what the differences might be.
I'm in a time loop somewhere or something. It's probably somewhere around Christmas time. There's some, it's cold outside, it's warm inside. I'm surrounded by some friends and family, maybe some, the glow of some candlelight, some music playing. Yeah, something fairly chill and festive. I'm going to be talking about Scavenger's Rain. Have you seen that? HBO, Scavenger's Rain. No. You must watch this.
No.
And you could watch it with Rod as well, because it's a little bit of horror kind of mixed in there. This is an animated series. The whole season's out. So if you got HBO, you can find it there. And this is a... It starts off where there's a different number of people that are shipwrecked on this planet, this alien planet. And we later find out, actually, I can't remember what their ship was doing, but they're escape pods. And so you start off following three different, one pairing of the captain and someone else on the ship who escaped together. And there's one other person who's escaped who works in this storage and ship containment on the ship. And then someone else who's, you later find out, who's done some things they shouldn't have, this other character. And there are different parts of this alien planet, and they're able to bring back, kind of crash land the ship itself. And there's some people still alive in the sort of cryogenic pods there. And these three groups are trying to get back to the ship. This alien world, and it feels like annihilation. And in fact, it comes up in some of their descriptions. They realize they were creating this, and it's so beautifully constructed. I don't know if it's like Studio Ghibli meets like Annihilation meets moments of Alien. Uh-huh. It's like everything can save you, but change you and kill you. And I forget to mention, there's a robot that's with one of the characters as well. And it's got this cool transformation story. And it's so imaginative, and the animation's really beautiful, but it's really for adults. It's really clever storytelling. There's not even that much dialogue, but it's full of suspense. You feel like something could happen at every moment. It's not outright terrifying. All those moments of terror, it's a little bit creepy, but if you love sci-fi and imagination, and especially if you like animation, this is such a beautiful series. For me, we're nearing the point where I start to think about my top five or top 10 for the year. This is absolutely top 10, probably top five for me, shows I watched in 2023. Wow. Like, it's totally recommend it. A lot of people watch it on HBO. It's definitely doing well. So I hope it does end. It resolves itself in a way that's cool, and yet it leaves itself open to a season two. So it's two thumbs up. Yeah.
We're always looking for something new. You know what? I've been looking around for the spaceman's ball, and I haven't found it yet. And somebody's got to send me direction.
In a space opera narrative, there's an alternative version of yourself enjoying that spaceman's ball right now. Yeah.
Oh, who's already there? Man.
All right. Okay. Take care.
See you, Chris.